Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cisternino here, back with some special coverage of this Survivor season. Going to catch up with Denise Stapley, the winner from Survivor Philippines. She's going to be my guest today on some bonus coverage of Survivor Worlds Apart. That's coming up here in just a moment. But first, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are our friends over at Pro Flowers, because Mother's Day is this Sunday coming up. And don't forget about Mom. Make sure you get her some great flowers from Pro Flowers, because Pro Flowers is offering our listeners 100 blooms with a free glass vase for just $19.99. Make your mom's day even more special with an upgrade to a premium vase and add chocolates for just $9.99 more. Go to proflowers.com today and use our code REALITYTV. That's reality space TV. The Pro Flowers website makes buying a beautiful gift for your mom simple and quick. They've got everything you need for Mother's Day or for all the moms in your life in one place at one time. And your flowers are guaranteed to be fresh and beautiful for at least 7 days. And they'll get delivered on the date that you choose. So here's the only way to get 100 blooms with a free glass vase for just $19.99. Visit proflowers.com. Click on the blue microphone in the top right corner and type in reality TV. That's proflowers.com. Click on the microphone and type in reality TV. Order today. This offer expires this Friday at midnight. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cisternino here with some special coverage here of this Survivor season. For a couple of weeks now, I've been trying to track this person down because I've wanted to have her on the podcast basically since the merge. But the way that events have gone, I'm happy that she was moving for the last month and wasn't able to do the podcast. But now, here she is, the winner of Survivor Philippines, back here on the podcast. Here's Denise Stapley.
Hey, Rob. How are you?
Good. Denise, how did the move go?
Oh, my gosh. I think we're finally unpacked, and I just know I am never moving again. You forget. It's like childbirth, I think, and you forget how bad it really is.
Yes.
And so you think you might want to go through it again, and this is my reminder of exactly why I only have one child and why we should have only had one home. So,
yeah.
But it's good. It's great. We love it. So we're definitely home, and it's our forever home. So.
Oh, wow. That must be nice. Yeah. Yes.
It is. It is.
Yeah. I did my move at the start of this Survivor season, and it was just like you couldn't have picked a busier time for me to attempt to do a move. And I don't even think that I skipped like one podcast during that time. So it was just really crazy.
I can't even, and with a little one too,
yes.
I can't even imagine that, you know, that's just adds mass chaos to the whole process. So.
Yes. All right. Well, Denise, I'm so happy to have you back. And you know that I have so much love for you because you're my only, my only pick that ever won the game. Shireen was my pick this season and she went out, disappointed me. You're the only one that's come through for me through 10 seasons of doing this.
Well, I'm glad I could do that for you. Believe me, I'm glad on both our parts. So.
Yes. Although as I get more and more wrong, it's starting to feel less like skill and like the, you know, broken clock theory.
Yeah. You know, you get lucky at some point, right?
At some point I was bound to just luck into somebody. But all right, happy to have you back, Denise. And again, I'd been trying to get you on for so long because I felt like, you know, I saw this Tyler and Carolyn thing happening. And I said, you know, this feels a lot to me like a Malcolm and Denise. And I was a little worried that they weren't going to, you know, after the merge happened, that they were going to get sort of picked off and we weren't going to get a chance to talk about it. But you had faith. You said, I think Carolyn is in there for a while.
I did. You know, you could just, there's something about watching the two of them play that, you know, I was just hopeful that they're both she and Tyler seem to be, you know, very, you know, they're just very intelligent individuals. And in the game, they're playing, for the most part, very smart games where they're kind of staying out of the fray. So I was just hopeful that, you know, they'd kind of stay out of the fray. They're playing strategically. They're playing strong in challenges. But yeah, I had faith that we're going to see them, I hope, for quite a while.
Okay, so do you agree with that assessment that you feel like there are similarities there?
I do. You know what I mean? It, as the season goes on, you can see a few more. You know, you can think of them as, you know, they're the last two standing from the white collar. You know, you can see just kind of how they've been even kind of bound together now in some ways, I think, even because of Tyler being the only one that knows about Carolyn's immunity idol. You know, there are definitely some parallels with that. And definitely, I think how people are seeing Tyler as the more dominant one out of that pair. You know, if they were both sitting at the end, I think Tyler has just kind of garnered more of that maybe respect strategically or perception that he's playing more strategically than Carolyn. Whether or not that's actually the case or not, it just seems like that's the perception right now.
Yeah. You know, we touched on this perception idea back in the podcast this past week, where a lot of people are saying, boy, Tyler has a really good shot to win the game. The people that are out there are saying these sort of things, like especially in the episode at the Tribal Council this past week and in the Ponderosa videos over these past few weeks. But you don't hear a lot of people talking about Mama C has a really good chance to win this game. And now for the players that are out there, they don't know she has an idol, but the people at home do know that she has an idol, but you don't hear that a lot about her. Is it something about her, or do you feel like that there's something about us, the viewing audience, that we say, okay, well, we think it's going to be, whether it's some sort of, you know, subliminal, whether it's a sexist idea or an ageist idea because he's younger than she is. Well, what do you think that is?
You know, I'm not sure, but I'm truly not sure. But being at home, we see so many more dynamics than obviously you get to really, that when you're in the game, you just don't see them. So on the outside, you know, I was just thinking about this, you know, this morning, and the reality that I see, you know, and that maybe other people are seeing, that in that strong six, or that quote strong six, you know, if you put Tyler up there or Carolyn up there or Mike up there with any other, you know, of the remaining players, any one of them have a strong chance to win for different reasons. And they have kind of different stories that they can lay out and different strategies that they can, you know, hopefully win over the jury with. But I don't know, you know, I'm not sure what it is about Mama C that they're not seeing, you know, and because she's not, you know, you hear under the radar, she's vocal. She's talking with people. She definitely has shared her own opinions. She's not silent at tribal council. And she's clearly been strong in challenges. So I don't know if that's a part of this whole season and them just not seeing her as a female and as a threat, you know, as a threat. I don't know, but they're definitely, you know, which is a benefit for her, you know, targeting and seeing Tyler as more of a threat and Mike as more of a threat for sure. So I don't know what the answer is to that.
Okay. This season, I feel like, has been somewhat Philippines-esque in that, of course, it was the three tribe format. And now here we are after the merge. And we're talking about, you know, Tyler and Carolyn are the last two people left from their original tribe. But, you know, it was a little bit of a pagonging in the Philippines where all of these Tandang people ended up going out with, you know, Jeff Kent in the middle there between, you know, RC and Pete Bro and Artis and a bunch of those guys sort of going off, and the what was left of Calabaugh was sort of left with, you know, these people from Matt Singh and, of course, with, you know, Abby Maria, Scoopin, and Lisa. And the four that you ended up pulling together with, you know, yourself and Malcolm and Scoopin and Lisa, I feel like in some ways it's sort of like this Rodney four that has sort of come together sort of under the radar.
Definitely, because you've got the two blue collar and then possibly the two... Or am I pairing the right? Yes, Rodney and Sierra.
Rodney and Will. Yeah, so it's not quite the parallel there. So I don't know if you want to say that Rodney is more the Scoopin' or if Will is more the Scoopin'.
I think Will is going to be seen as more the Scoopin'. Yeah, definitely. Will is more the Scoopin'. You know, I think they both, you know, Rodney is just Rodney. But again, if, you know, you take those four, you know, those two could decide, and it could kind of be like with Scoopin and Lisa, you know, trying to decide between Malcolm and I. And honestly, I don't think it's going to matter if they take, you know, if Rodney and Will go to the end with either Carolyn or Tyler, they lose no matter what, because they just don't have, again, whether or not it's that perception, it's how they've played the game. They haven't, the way that they've built or destroyed relationships in the game, you know, it just, that perception is everything. I mean, we saw that, you know, clearly, and, you know, with the four of us, or with, you know, Lisa and Michael and Lisa and Scoopin and Malcolm and I. So yeah. I don't know, but I think Will's pretty much the Scoopin.
Okay. Yeah, there are some parallels, I feel like, because that I think it's safe to say that like Tyler and Carolyn probably would win out against some of those guys. Rodney, I feel like, might have a case. It's hard. It's really hard to get a good read on how people perceive him. Was that the same? And I know that, you know, Scoopin' is kind of out there, but did Michael and Lisa, did they both feel like whoever we go up against in the end out of Malcolm and Denise, we're going to lose?
No, I think Lisa, I think of the two of them, Lisa may have had that the most kind of realistic perception of what would likely have played out. And so I think she understood, you know, the best chance is, you know, kind of looking between and you know, myself and Malcolm and taking me. Scoopin', I think Scoopin' thought he could win against either. And keep in mind, I love Scoopin'. Scoopin' and I are great friends. And I really
enjoyed
my time. Exactly. You know, and I enjoyed my time on the island with him, you know, my guess is to this day believes that, you know, when he sat down, you know, in that final tribal council, whether or not it would have been myself or Malcolm, that he had a solid shot to win.
Yeah.
But the relationships in Tandang had just, you know, and I wasn't there for so much of that, you know, that first part of the game. So I don't know how, you know, he was perceived or got perceived like that so much in Tandang, because I just wasn't a part of that tribe until, you know, after the merge.
And he thought he won when you guys went to the finale too, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh boy.
I think he was really surprised. I think he really thought, you know, that he still had a solid shot to take it home. And, you know, I don't know if he carried that, you know, after we, you know, left the Philippines or not, or, you know, how long he held on to that. But yeah, I think definitely, you know, Lisa, on the other hand, I know, you know, just right after the game, you know, and I wasn't, you know, putting any eggs in any basket, you know, right off the front, because I didn't, you know, I truly didn't know for sure if I had won or if I had, you know, I thought I had a pretty good chance. But I know Lisa commented to me, you know, right after the game, you know, hey, congratulations, you know, pretty sure you won it. And, you know, and I kind of argued back with her even at that point, you know, we don't know. We don't know how this is going to play out until those votes are read. You don't know. But again, Lisa had the most realistic perception of what the outcome ended up actually being.
Okay, let's go back to Carolyn and Tyler, because ultimately in your game, you were the one that was able to, you know, put the knife in Malcolm's back. And I mean that in the most positive way.
Yes.
And take Malcolm out when he was exposed. Yep. At the final four. Do you feel like, is that what Carolyn needs to do also? Does she need to look at this of how do I get Tyler out?
Absolutely. 100%. And I think she will. I think, again, Carolyn strikes me as a pretty smart player and calculated, and she's thinking, you know, steps that, you know, I think, or at least I want to believe that she's thinking steps ahead, and that she will know that that's what she needs to do. You know, as much as, you know, I could turn back the clock, and if I hadn't had to do that with Malcolm, you know, I know I wouldn't have, and then I would have lost. But I know for Carolyn, definitely, I think that's her best shot, is she's got to know when to get Tyler out and hitch onto, you know, another set of pairs that she knows she can sit next to and, you know, tell a better story and win the game. So definitely that's what I think she needs to do.
Now, why is that? Do you feel like it's because Tyler has played such a good game, or do you feel like it's back to that perception thing that we're talking about?
See, you know, I think it's the perception, you know, without being out there, I feel like we're missing, like there've been a few players this season, and Tyler's one of them, where up until these last kind of episodes, I just haven't really gotten a good read on who he is as a player. You know, we saw him, you know, get confronted, and I can't remember who he got confronted by out in the woods, but it's like his inability to his inability to just kind of shift on a dime and roll with it and kind of tell a story. And he just kind of like verbally, like just vomited all the info. You know, so when I see that, I don't think of him as a super savvy player, but then you see some of the conversations with Carolyn, I think, okay, he's thinking. And, you know, when you hear him talk at tribal council, he's thinking one path, but then you also have Jeff playing devil's advocate. And, you know, throwing out there those seeds that, you know, everybody else sitting in those on those tribal stools, they're paying attention, or you hope they're paying attention to it, and they're listening and realizing, you know, we only have six here. And that was, again, the same thing out in the Philippines, is, you know, and luckily, you know, Malcolm pushed more for that, you know, from that six to go to a four. So, yeah, I don't know. I just, but I think it's more the perception. I just haven't seen enough to say, I think he's this awesome player. I think he's a good player. I think he plays strategically, but the perception seems to be that he's a stronger strategic player than Mama C.
Okay. And as far as Mama C goes, what has she done well this season?
You know, I think she's adapted. I think for the most part, you know, after they moved from the white collar, initially it seemed like she was able to try and blend. She got in and kind of, you know, and now going back all these episodes, I can't remember, you know, getting kind of connected. I was thinking with Kelly, you know, trying to find kind of new, you know, being willing to kind of try some different alliances and be able to adapt. You know, she hasn't been, you know, overly, you know, which I think is a gender thing. You know, clearly she's a strong woman in business and, you know, clearly has a strong personality, but in the game, I think she's also realized, you know, sometimes you just have to listen and there's really a benefit in that. And when you've got so many egos out there, you know, regardless of what we want to say, if it's right or wrong in that gender piece, you know, she's had to play, you know, in a way that it's a smart game, but maybe it's a quiet game. You know, she clearly continues to be helpful, or it appears to be, you know, that she's helpful at camp. You know, she doesn't just lay around. She's not giving anyone a reason to gripe about her, complain about her, but she's also not dominating so much that they're seeing her as that, you know, incredible threat, although she's performing quite well.
Yeah. She's been very good in the challenges so far. So yeah. Are you feeling like things are going to fall Mama C's way, or is there somebody else that you feel like has the inside track?
You know, I think it can, if she can kind of stay, you know, as long as, you know, those that are left in the game can continue to see Mike as a bigger threat than her and Tyler, that garners her more time, you know, and once those two are out, then she could be in trouble. You know, if those two go out, then I think she's in trouble. I think it's kind of that pecking order of, okay, you know, they want to get Mike out, you know, then, or will they shift and get Tyler out after the fallout from this last vote? You know, will Dan swing or shift something? But I think as long as she has those guys there for a few more votes as a shield, I think it could go her way. I would love to see it go her way, you know, obviously for many, many reasons. But, you know, other than that, you know, if Mike has to just keep winning challenges or something, and I don't even know what would have to happen, you know, to swing Dan back and Sierra back. And, you know, I don't know if you know, if they'd be able to pull anybody else, but, you know, or Rodney. I doubt that Rodney's going to unhitch himself from, you know, I don't see him going back with Mike at all. But so I don't know.
So who is your person of interest? Who is the person that you think is going to be the winner?
That I think is going to be the winner.
Yeah. I'm giving you one ship, Denise. Where are you putting it?
Doggone it. See, I know who I want to win, but I know who you know, I'm going to go back to Mike. I'm only because of the narrative. Either he's going to somehow succeed and get all the way, or he's got a great narrative for coming back. You know, so I maybe it's more just because I really have enjoyed watching Mike play. And the moves he's made. And so his case to win, if he can get to the end, is solid. So I know I'm going to be wrong, but I'm going to pick Mike.
Okay, there you go. Mike, and how do you think he's going to do it? Do you see this story as being one of Jess' immunity challenges and, you know, the idol, or do you think that he can get the numbers back on his side somehow?
You know, Mike, of all people, you know, we've seen him talk to other people and he has a good, like he seems to have a good way to approach, whether or not they're listening. You know, we saw him try and convince Dan, but he seems to have a decent way of trying to convince people that's not, you know, basically telling them you're just a complete idiot for even thinking about doing this, but to try to bring them on board. You know, I think if he can sway, you know, any of that final six away from that pairing from Mama C and Tyler, I think he's got a shot. And if he can start with Dan and get Sierra and Dan's got that extra vote, if that plays into it, I think you could see something happen. But, you know, he's got to get past next week's vote. And I'm trying to think, does he have to? No, we're not to the point where he has to use his idol yet. But obviously, if he doesn't get immunity, I imagine he would. I can't imagine why he wouldn't use his hidden immunity idol. But that gives him one more week for them to have to eat one of their own.
Okay.
You know, and that's the only way I can imagine it is it's going to be some tricky maneuvering and people really thinking through who do I want to sit with at the end. But again, if they're thinking, you know, truly thinking, none of them should want to sit next to Mike. I don't think.
Now, you were the part of a pretty wacky tribal council involving the idol back in Survivor Philippines. Could you just set up what exactly how it went when Lisa outed Malcolm with the idol?
Oh my gosh. Do you want like how far, it depends on how far back how the idol came to even.
Just talk about from the tribal council point of view. Refresh our memory.
Trying to think when we were there, all I remember was, you know, the way that the split was, you know, Malcolm, was word, you know, there'd been this, you know, kind of scuttlebutt, you know, before tribal council. And so there was word that, you know, the rumor had been going around apparently that Malcolm had the idol. So Malcolm goes and just whips this thing out and kind of, you know, pulled a Mike, you know, or Mike pulled a Malcolm and whips it out and essentially says, you know, don't think about it. You know, if you can go ahead and vote for me, but it's coming back on one of you. And so he used it, you know, very protectively. And then we had Abby jump into the mix and just offer hers up. So we knew, you know, it was kind of our confirmation of, we knew she had the idol all along and pulled it out, but they both used, you know, she didn't even remotely threaten to play it. It was more defending why she had it and hadn't shown it to her alliance. But Malcolm, it was very much, you know, it's kind of that defensive move of, you know, don't think about it or it's coming back, which is what we saw with Mike this last time.
Yeah. And it's funny because the vote that we were comparing this to so much this week was the way that Malcolm played the idols when he came back in Karamoan, when he did with the three amigos. But he actually did play those two idols on everybody. But here in Philippines, he did bluff that he was going to play the idol. Mm-hmm. Similar to, you know, Russell has done that in the past as well of, you know, taking Harvey, the idol, wearing it, but not necessarily playing it. So did you like that move that Mike made, or did you think that he should have played the idol for Shireen?
Oh my God. No, I loved it. And, you know, at home, there's the part going, oh, play it, play it, play it. Let this just burn them right now. But then there's the other part going, no, now I respect him even a little bit more as a player, because the reality is if he would have played it, he loses his safety net, you know, and, you know, it's again, in a similar fashion with Malcolm and I truly, and I don't think Shireen, you know, in listening to her exit interview, I think that's where she might have voiced it. But similar to that, I never expected Malcolm to play the idol for me or to protect me with an idol. Maybe I was hopeful, but at the core of it, you just know, you know, at that point, it's an individual game and you can only kind of protect your alliance so far. And, you know, when you're looking at that moment, what feels like an incredibly, you know, a sinking ship, you know, it's how can I, you know, kind of create some waves and maybe some fallout that will help me, which is exactly what he did. But then he really, I think he had to hang on to that to keep himself in the game, you know, for a couple more days. Cause that's, I look at that and all you need, you have to be in it to win it. You need one more, you know, I remember saying to myself, I just need one more day. I just need one more day, one more day. And you're constantly trying to figure out, you know, what your next step is or what your move is. And no, I like the way that he played it. I can't imagine him having actually given it to Shireen.
Yeah. And you guys, you and Malcolm, that your idol that he had was one that you guys found together. You had at least a claim to that idol too.
You know, people have said that. I don't think that I had any claim to it. You know, I really don't. And, you know, I don't harbor anything with that. You know, we looked for, I don't know how long on that island trying to find that stupid thing. And we'd both looked on the same basket and he was a smart one. He knows, he realized he was pretty sure where it was. He was the one that popped it off, you know, and initially there was kind of like that, oh my gosh, yay, we're safe. And then the reality sinks in like, no, we're not. That's his idol. It's in his possession. And so it wasn't, I didn't look at the idol as ours, but what it did help, I think, was it's like with Carolyn and Tyler. I knew he had it. Tyler knows she has it. And, you know, that's leverage. You know, it's leverage that can be used against you if you betray your alliance or you decide you want to take a path that doesn't fit with what your alliance's path is. So if nothing else, it was maybe leverage in that way. That then again got used against him anyway, you know, inadvertently by Lisa, you know, airing out our laundry.
Literally.
Literally. Yep. Literally and figuratively. Yeah.
Yes. In both ways. Okay. Let's talk about this stuff that went on with Shireen. And that was the other major reason why I wanted to talk to you, in addition to all of your insight into the game, and especially these comparisons between, you know, Carolyn and Tyler and what you and Malcolm ultimately went through in the Philippines. So, you know, that your occupation as a therapist, I think, gives you an insight into this that I just don't think that there's too many other survivors that would be able to speak on this in the way that you are able to, and have the, you know, the credibility that you have about speaking about it as a survivor and outside of survivor. So we all know about the situation with Shireen and Will. And I would just love to get your comments on that, both in the game and then sort of like the stuff that happens outside of the game, in the way that all of us who watch the show are handling what we've seen as well.
You know, in the game, you know, I'm trying to think of how to even start this, because, you know, I clearly, you know, I definitely have strong feelings about, you know, when we watch this and we see it.
Yeah, and you know, a thing or two about strong language from Survivor's School. You played with Abby Maria.
I do. And so there are parts of this, you know, and I just wrote a big, you know, Facebook rant the other day, and I tend to, you know, I probably, you know, stick my foot in my mouth sometimes, but I do. And, you know, and I can be pretty unfiltered, and I do have strong feelings.
Ask Jatia.
You know.
Right.
Jatia probably would not like to have a beer with me anytime soon. But
welcome to the club.
You know, exactly. But you never got your package either. So maybe no. That's a good thing. So, but, you know, I call it as I see it. And that's no different than what I do in therapy. You know, that's my job. You know, my job is to reflect the behavior that I see, and to challenge the clients that I work with. And, you know, when we're out on the island, you know, I keep saying the same over and over and over again, but wherever you go, there you are. You can't stop being you. And so landing on that island, you know, wherever it is, you take who you are right with you. You know, you don't leave that at home. Everybody wants to say it's a game and I'm going to play totally different. But, you know, after so many days, you can only maintain that, you know, some kind of a false front for so long before all of the traits, whether or not they're good traits or they're bad traits, start coming out. You know, like you said with Abby, you know, clearly, I don't remember what day it was, but finally I just had enough. And you know, I'm probably lucky they didn't air, you know, some of the things. It wasn't a personal attack, but it definitely was not kind, you know, and calling her out on her behavior. But we all get to that point. But watching, you know, from home, from the piece at home, and, you know, what I see in the game is, you know, I can only make guesses, because obviously I've never spoken with Shireen directly, nor Will. But the situation with Will just seemed like, for him, you know, that perceived attack on his character, you know, just pushed this button. And he was already, you know, heated up about not getting his letters. And, you know, watching him unload on her was just painful from home. And what I saw from home was like watching some of my clients, and watching my clients relay stories after their spouses have verbally attacked them, or they've gone back to their family of origin and they've, you know, verbally attacked them. And it was painful to watch at home, and just, you know, so frustrating to watch nobody stand up, you know, other than Mike. You know, Mike finally, it's like, oh my gosh, yes, somebody's got to step in. But I think that's where people, again, sometimes, and I don't know, you know, I'm not in any of those players' heads sitting there. You know, I would love to have them all in my office and be able to have, you know, kind of this, you know, time to kind of sift through this. But, you know, we don't know in their heads, are they thinking, okay, I need to stay out of this fray, because they're thinking of it as a game? Are they just kind of frozen because they just don't know what to do? Do they simply lack the courage to speak up? I don't know. But, you know, it was just pretty appalling from home, you know, to watch it, and to watch, you know, how it just continued. But clearly, you know, and, you know, for Shireen, you know, just watching how it had triggered her, you know, it's been great to hear how vocal she's been about it and how she's kind of managing it. But I think when you go out there also, people sometimes lack that awareness of how they're impacting other people. You know, I don't know Will's history, or anything like that, but clearly, you know, the verbal attack was just so inappropriate, you know, just wrong.
So in your work, are you more likely to deal with the person who is the victim of something like that alone? Or is it more likely that you would have like a couple who comes to you And these are the sort of issues that we're trying to work through.
Honestly, it's a little bit of both. You know, I work, you know, more so it would probably be predominantly the individual. So I'm working with, you know, the victims of sexual abuse and physical abuse or verbal abuse, you know, and they're, you know, whether or not they're dealing with depression or anxiety or relationship issues and, you know, helping them to manage, you know, what happens for them in, say, work situations when they're dealing with a hostile boss and how they're trying to respond differently or trying to set boundaries and stay away from toxic people. So predominantly individual, but I've also had couples. And, you know, I've had couples where I've had to, you know, stop one partner or the other. And it may be heterosexual couples or gay and lesbian couples. And where the behavior is just like, no, you can't do that here. Like, you can't do that in my office. You know, you have to stop. And so I'm definitely maybe, you know, when I say, you know, I can't imagine not speaking up. I think part of that is just who I am. But part of that's the work that I do every day is I have to speak up. I can't sit in my office and have a couple and watch one of them literally berate the other one. You know, that will not happen in my office. It's happened, you know, where people start that. And I've literally kicked people out of my office. I've fired people on the spot because it's unsafe and it's harmful emotionally.
And what do you do if you have, you know, two people that are fighting like that? Do you separate them and you can, you know, send one person out? Like, isn't it going to continue outside of the office?
You know, I think, you know, it depends on what the history is. You know, if I know that there's been active domestic violence, I don't typically see clients where there's active domestic violence or recent domestic violence, depending on, you know, intimidation levels. You know, I've definitely had couples where there's mutual, where it's kind of insane. There's mutual violence, where there's not really one that feels victimized, so to speak, or they don't feel intimidated, but they just know when they get into these conflicts, they escalate and they're extremely verbal or they're blocking each other from leaving a room or that kind of behavior. But when it happens in the office, I'm trying to think, you know, I've had times where I've just had to say, you know, you need to stop, you know, and I'm saying it, you know, probably not that calmly. I've never actually, and I never would physically get in the middle of, you know, I've had a past mentor that did try that and ended up with her head up against the wall, mm-hmm. By an assaultive client. So I would never physically try and stop them, but I would also never let it escalate to that point. You can read and you can watch body language and I can pay attention to how people are literally sitting in their chair and how they're responding. And, you know, you get a male spouse that's clenching his fists, and, you know, gritting his teeth as he's, you know, berating someone, you know, we need to, you know, stop this, or I need to have one leave the room. You know, sometimes I'll check if they came to session together, you know, because I don't want them leaving in the same car. You know, did they arrive together? Will they leave together? It can get really complicated and really messy.
How did these skills help you in Survivor, if at all?
You know, it's so funny, you know, and I know in the final tribal council, you know, Malcolm berated me for nodding my head and being a therapist, and that's what I do. But that is what I do. But before I was a therapist, I was just who I am. And so once I was in the game, I can truly, genuinely say, I never thought about playing that therapist role. I think it's just part of who I am. And I know there are times when I'm just much more comfortable, you know, not just in therapy, but, you know, in therapy, I have to sit back and listen, but even in group settings where I'm much more comfortable just sitting back and taking it in and paying attention and then figuring out where I want to jump in or how I want to exit the situation. So I think in terms of, you know, being able to maintain a level of calm, maybe as part of that therapeutic piece of, okay, when things start heating up, just stay calm and try and, you know, think clearly. You know, definitely knowing, I think one thing, you know, for the most part, knowing how to approach other people with egos. I couldn't come and say, you know, like I couldn't come to Michael and say, or to Scoopin and say, you know, you'd be stupid to take Malcolm. Like, why would you? That would just be dumb. You'll never win against him. I had to put myself in that equation. And that was genuine also, you know, the conversation that I had with Scoopin trying to convince them to take me to that final three. But so I think it's, you know, just the ability to adapt, you know, in therapy, we're always adapting. You know, it's, I don't necessarily know what a client's going to walk in my door with. You know, I might have, I keep pretty good notes and I have an agenda that I write down for the next session, you know, regardless of the issue that a client presents with. But I also know there are times when client walks in and they drop the bomb that I was not expecting. And I just have to be ready to just adjust to it and adapt and roll with it. And so I think that probably helped in the game also.
Going back to the incident with Will and Shireen, did you feel like that was a new, you know, low point in terms of attacks that we've seen on Survivor? Or do you feel like that this incident, because it happened to a person who had been the victim of this sort of, you know, domestic violence before, that that was what made it so polarizing for people?
Yeah. I think it's a combination of both of those. I think, you know, for me, I know it became more personal because it did go right back to my clients, you know, and I could just feel that for them. So for me, it felt like I'm trying to think, you know, in all the years of watching, I can't think of, at least I don't recall off the top of my head, a conflict that was that personal between a male and a female, you know, on the show that was that demeaning and attacking. You know, you could look back to our season and Abby calling Scoopin' a moron and an idiot, but
she's know, like, it, you know, it, the it, insult it, comic dog. I, right, I like, I kind of right. feel like Abby Maria calling you a moron or an idiot. It's almost like, how upset right. can you get?
It's
I'll ask RC. I don't know.
Right. It's yeah. just not the same. And Scoopin's got enough ego, you know, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but he's got enough ego to tolerate that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, watching, you know, the perception, you know, as we, again, watch from, you know, our couch at home, you know, you're just watching Will unfold that and you're just watching Shireen just close down. And as she's standing up and she's chewing on, I don't know what she's eating, you know, coconut or something. And I see her, she's doing this kind of almost, and I don't know. And again, I don't want to get in her head and make assumptions, but it's almost like there's this kind of checking out dissociation that she's maybe, you know, she's right back in all of those past experiences.
Yeah.
And so it did, it just felt worse than anything, you know, which is why I was compelled to write about it, because it felt worse than many of the conflicts that we've seen. And it wasn't about just about an alliance or betrayal of an alliance. It was just personal. It was demeaning, and it was, yeah. But we've also seen Dan, you know, in his own way, be, you know, on a different level, you know, be demeaning and dismissive of, you know, Sierra, you know, his apology. I think it was his apology to her that I laughed. I went, oh my gosh, that is like all the apologies I hear in my office.
Oh, you mean this one?
Just close your mouth, open your ears, and just watch what happens.
Yes, just watch what happens.
Exactly. It's like these are the worst apologies and worst ways to approach people. But again, we're seeing it happen, you know, to the women, you know, by Dan, you know, it's that, you know, just again, dismissive, you know, even his apology. And again, I really struggle because I know I've been called on the carpet by, you know, other players. And I know I'm not in, I don't know any of these individual, you know, these players personally. But I listen to my gut, and it's that perception.
Well, who's calling you out, Denise?
Oh, come on now. Cass loves me. You know that.
Cass calls you out.
Cass loves me.
Well, I know that's interesting to me, because I feel like you and Cass would be on the same side of a lot of it. Did you, because you were hard on her during her season?
Exactly. And I think it's hard for all of us, you know, to have someone disagree with how we played the game. Believe me, I've had my share of people disagree, you know, with what I did or didn't do. Or
well, what was it about Cass's game that you disagreed with?
You know what? There was nothing about her game. I thought she played a fine game. I didn't care for her social game. And I would have struggled with that, but it was something that I had written, it wasn't even an attack towards Cass.
Yeah.
I had been struck by a comment that she had made in one of her day after, and it was about kind of ladies play like men, and it was a gender thing, and it got me, you know, I got my panties in a wad, and of course, and then I write, and then, I piss people off, and I'm okay with that. But, you know, with,
because that Cass was saying that she played like a guy. Was that what the crux of it was?
No. And I don't think that's what she meant by it. And it was the way that it had struck me was, you know, we can't go out there, you know, that it was this, there was a feeling again, that playing the game that we may have to play as females out there, gets dismissed, but it's a reality. And if I go out there and play like a guy with an ego and, you know, balls bigger than, you know, whatever, I'm going to be voted off immediately.
No, I think that you bring up a lot of great points. And this is something I've been thinking about a lot recently with, you know, between, you know, Big Brother and Survivor. And I see it more on Big Brother, but, you know, every season on Big Brother, there's always, you know, the most aggressive and or vocal or outspoken women in the house. They are always the first people that are picked off. And I really feel like the key to success on a reality show, again, this is just from what I'm observing. I'm not saying that this is how it should be or that it's right. But if you're a woman and you're coming into a reality show like a Survivor or a Big Brother, you need to keep a low profile in the early going. If you are too vocal in your leadership early on, you will be seen as a threat typically by the men and often by some of the other women. And it's you really need to, you know, lay low, be under the radar really up until the merge. And then you can start, you know, making your moves. And you know, Kim played this way. I mean, you yourself were, you know, not considered a threat in the first half of the game. I go back to a person, not to say that she was, you know, going to be the greatest thing ever. But do you remember Christina that played with Boston Rob in Redemption Island? I thought that she seemed like she was going to be, you know, a real alpha type, you know, a woman that maybe in a different circumstance she would have done well. And she was just, you know, Boston Rob targeted her immediately. Yep. This is a threat, and you know she has to go. And so look, there have been women who have you know. I'm trying to think of the example, like even somebody like Natalie last season, who is, you know, one of the biggest personalities that you're going to find. She did a good job in the first half of the game that she wasn't really thought of in that way. And people sort of dismissed her and weren't looking at her at, you know, being as, you know, as she toned down, you know, her big brash personality in the first half of the game.
And I think she was, and even with Natalie, she was almost seen as one of the guys.
Yeah. And actually her sister got in trouble for the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. For calling, I know.
For calling Joshua like one of the girls.
Exactly. But she was, I think she fit in more as one of the guys. And she, you know, and so you're right. I think I don't agree with it. I don't think it's right. But it is what it is. And, you know, my favorite quote now, you know, from another podcast that I listen to is, you know, the camel craps and the caravan moves on and we have to deal with it, you know, so it is what it is as of right now. And we can keep trying to change it in the game. But when you're in there and you're playing for $1 million, you've got to play the cards that you have. And as a woman coming into the game, I think you're right. You just can't come out of the gate being that dominant. You know, it doesn't mean that there's not value in that or that it's not right. It just is what it is.
Yeah. And I'm just trying to even think back to the men versus women seasons and when it's a group of all women, how that is perceived to be sort of the, you know, the take charge leader. Like I know I played with Dina, who was probably one of the, you know, the strongest women that, you know, Survivor's ever seen. You know, I'm not talking about from a physical standpoint, just from a personality standpoint. And she certainly met, you know, her share of, resistance within that group. And in Vanuatu, I'm trying to think of, you know, you had people like Twyla, who was certainly, you know, more. But again, and she did actually well in the game. But I think that, you know, that there, I don't want to just make a hard and fast rule because, you know, nothing is black and white like that. But I just feel like it is not the right way to come into the game.
No.
Whereas there are guys that are able to come into that game. And again, it doesn't work for every guy that comes into the game like that, like a Brad Culpepper, for instance.
Yep. No, where there's too much, where there's just way too much bravado. But you're right. We've never seen it work the other way for a female. We've seen it for men. And again, that's just a reflection. You know, Survivor is a reflection. You know, it's a microcosm of the bigger world that we live in. And that's still the way our society sees it. And they, again, with those perceptions, you figure everybody comes into that, you know, that game with perceptions about what it is to be female, what it is to be male, their moms, their sisters, you know, how they should act. We have those experiences, you know, did they have a female boss? Did we have a male boss? I mean, how you relate to people is a function of all of that life you've lived up to that moment you stepped into that game. And it affects it, you know, so coming in and, you know, we see, you know, different roles that kind of get filled and get played, the mom or the, you know, but it's, and maybe I go back to Mama C, you know, if we think of that, you know, she hasn't, and maybe that's another reason why I think she can, you know, go farther in the game or continue, you know, on this, the streak is she hasn't come in, guns blazing. You know, she's been strong. She's been helpful. She's been able to blend and adapt, but she's not, you know, she's not the, you know, the narcissistic boss or female, you know, that female, you know, she's not such a, she doesn't have such a hard personality coming in or so strong that people are offended by it or off put by it.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought up the archetype of the mom, because on Survivor, I think that this is another, you know, archetype among women that struggles. And I don't know if people perceived you on your season of Survivor as the mom. I feel like you were
the old woman.
No, but this
old
is
woman.
But this
the
is
old,
an
haggard looking woman.
Stop. But you know, this is an interesting stat about you, Denise. Do you know this, that you were the oldest female winner of Survivor?
I do. And you know what? That's the only part of me.
Isn't that crazy?
It is. But you know, and you know, that's the only part of me selfishly that doesn't want Carolyn to win because I want to hang on to that stat.
Yeah. And
but
really,
I also would love to see her win. I mean, that would be so awesome because she's in her 50s.
The only person, and I'm trying to just running through the winners in my head real quick.
Well,
that
Tina.
Is the mom, right? Is yep. Tina. And yep. It was, you know, and that was a close vote. And that was so early on, but the mom, just like go back to Missy last season where, people resent the mom archetype. And again, we see all of these women that go to the final tribal council and then just get lit up. And you sat next to one of those people who was like the mom and got lit up in that final tribal council.
And that's exactly what I was going to say is I think Lisa on our season was viewed more as that mom archetype than I was, you know, so, you know, and I can't think of the old, you know, the other types, but, you know, she definitely took that heat because people saw her as that and kind of that nurturing mom. And I really didn't, you know, as much as people may have thought I would have done that or would have been this very nurturing therapist out there, I didn't. You know, I had conversations with Lisa, but I didn't, you know, I didn't console anyone. I was, you know, just kind of get up and keep moving. So maybe that's a part of it also, that just the role that I played and just, you know, I didn't get stuck into that mom role. You know, it was more kind of that workhorse or, you know, and so there was less threatening to it. But had I been in that role, you know, at least, I mean, you see it take heat because if you don't act in a consistent way to that type, people feel completely betrayed and it's on a, you know, and it's on a unconscious or conscious level. But I mean, that's again, goes back to that perception of what it is to be a mom, what it is to be, you know, a dad or what, you know, and, but for women that one really, takes some heat. Almost every season we see a mom, like you said, Missy, oh my gosh, you know, took it horribly.
So
it happens.
I think that might be just a losing game in general, you know, other than Tina, who, you know, was a real partnership with Colby. I feel like the mom role is just a loser game to play. I don't mean to say that moms are losers, especially with Mother's Day around the corner, but either you have to betray people and people get so like a Dawn is probably the best example and people resent you for turning on them. Hey, I treated you. I was, you know, I protected you. I kept you safe and I confided in you because you were like the mom. How could you do this to me? Or the other side of that is that you don't betray those confidences and then you go up there and then you just get lit up of what did you even do to get here? You know, Monica Culpepper, what did you do to get here? And
there's no respect. Yeah.
Right. But I'm not saying that it's the archetype that's the problem. I think it's, you know, playing the mom to people. Mm-hmm. Whereas if, you know, you could be a stronger, you know, older woman, But just not be not, you know, take people in, you know, in a motherly role, because I think once you do that, I think it's trouble.
But, you know, I just thought as we're talking, I think it's hard, though. You're right. I think it's a losing role. But if that's the only role you've really known, mm-hmm. you can't not bring that in.
There you are.
Like for me, it's like, yeah. Like I am a mom. Yeah, I'm a mom, but I've also worked full time, you know, for forever. You know, I have my own business. And so there's life outside of that that helps me adapt with that. But like for Dawn, I mean, she's a professor, but she's got, you know, multiple. I mean, that is such an integral part of her life and her identity and who she is. And, you know, and Missy, I think, you know, with Baylor, clearly, you know, that partnership or that bond with her daughter, you know, is such an integral part of who she is and their history. You know, Carolyn, we don't hear a lot about that. You know, she worked in the corporate world, and so she's got more of that balance. But you're right. I think if that's your primary identity, it's tough to make that work in the game.
Okay. One more thing about this, and then I have some questions for you.
Sure.
How do you feel like Jeff has handled all of this, both on the show and outside the show?
You know, I think for the first time, you know, there's sometimes when I'm just like, come on, you know, and I don't want to piss Jeff off, because I have such a huge respect for him and for the game and for production, you know, but there have been times when I feel like in the past they've danced around issues that have come up and played them off like, you know, everybody's hungry. It's like, no, come on. This is human behavior at its worst at times. And this last time, I think I wrote, you know, read one of the write-ups, you know, from Dalton Ross. And it was one of those times where Jeff really seemed like acknowledging it a little bit more. In the game, there's only so much that they can do. You know, I know that, you know, and unless somebody is, you know, I know that production would never let anybody get physically harmed. So in terms of how much they can intercede or not, you know, they really can't. It changes the narrative of the story and the outcome. But after the fact, it seems like it's being addressed better than it has been in the past. More directly, maybe.
So again, so much of this is out there in, you know, the Survivor world right now, and people are talking about it so much on social media. So Jeff tweeted this past week, last couple of days, he said, for all of you so mad at me, keep in mind, while I'm in host role, my job is to ask questions, not share personal opinions. In no way do I condone degrading comments about women or domestic violence. I have a mom, a wife, a daughter. It's disgusting. But showing it, letting people speak honestly about it, yep, is the way you bring it to light. I hope that makes sense. It will definitely be a topic at the live reunion show on May 20th. All right, Denise, so if I may, can I ask you to do a bit of a role-playing exercise with me?
I will try.
Okay. And I'm going to quantum leap you into Jeff Probst's body, May 20th. You're on stage. All right. You know, like winter montage, yada, yada, yada. You know, Mama C, here's your check. Okay. All right. And all right. So we come back from commercial. All right. How do you want to handle this? What is the most productive way in your mind, and the most, you know, beneficial way, not to be like sensationalized or anything like that. If you really just wanted to, you know, help the people involved and the people at home, how would you handle this?
You know, I think the way not to handle it is to force an apology between the two of them on that stage. To force an apology on the stage, it doesn't feel right. You know, we watched that with Dawn and Brenda. And it was uncomfortable and awkward, and it would not have been genuine. You know, it was just uncomfortable, and that's because that's their process. Like for Will and Shireen, you know, they have to resolve this, and it's not on Shireen. You know, Will's got to have some awareness of, you know, the role that he played. And so I think if anything, part of it, you know, part of me doesn't want to give Will, you know, and that's my more personal, like, I don't want to give Will the floor. I don't want him to have an opportunity to make excuses for shitty behavior, excuse my language, you know, but for crappy, inappropriate, hurtful behavior. But to be able to have Shireen talk about what she's done with it, that's more, you know, I've seen on Twitter, you know, her donating some money for some domestic violence programs or to different programs. And maybe that it's being able to give her the floor to talk a little bit about, you know, very briefly, you know, rather than finding somebody random from the audience, you know, give the time, you know, to something that makes sense, you know, that's actually meaningful, and give her the floor, you know. And then if Will, you know, if they want to give Will the floor at all or to say anything, I think that needs to be preempted, and Jeff needs to know what he's going to say beforehand. Because otherwise, I think something can come off very, you know, disingenuous. You know, it's kind of like with, I don't want to have another apology that felt like, again, and I only say felt like because I'm not in his head, you know, Dan apologizing to Shireen felt like he was playing a character. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel like a genuine apology. It didn't feel like he really understood. And so unless Will can do that, I think it's going to fall on deaf ears.
Well, it didn't feel like a genuine apology because he apologized. And then it cut to him like, you know, Shireen may have had this, you know, these things happened to her in the past. And I am sorry that she had to go through that. However, she's a lying, you know, hypocrite,
yeah,
you know.
And it's like then he attacks her and then yeah. He tries to compare it to being adopted, which I'm sorry, but I also work with clients who are adopted and I'm sorry, but there are totally different issues and that made no sense. But so I don't know. So in terms of, you know, how Jeff will handle it, I just hope that, you know, if I could transport myself into his body and his brain, I would say, please do not force them to do an apology. If anything, ask them or ask Shireen, you know, if there's anything that she wants to say or to add or to just comment about how, you know, this did stir things for a lot of people and it became personal for, you know, much of America, you know, that on, you know, watching, that's the only way I can think, but yeah, no more rant, like, yeah, no more forced apologies.
And for Dan, you know, it just keeps coming back to like this whole thing that happened with Sierra earlier in the season where it was like, you know, he ended up in his apology, like, well, I was just doing to you what you did to me.
Yeah. He totally took back the apology. It's like,
right.
Like I need to do some therapy work with Dan to teach him how to actually apologize and how to make a good repair because that like totally undid it, you know, and that's against her, but like, you have to know how to do that.
Do you have a survivor discount for your people in your survivor family?
No. You know, yeah, no. As interesting as it would be, it would require margaritas and beer and then it would be a little bit unethical, but hey, we can just, you know, rent out a bar and just have a little, you know, a little session, but yeah, it would require way too much alcohol.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Very, very interesting stuff. One more thing. I know I said already one more thing. Rodney this season, has anything that Rodney has been doing, has that bothered you at all?
Rodney, you know, one, Rodney has grown on me. Rodney, I can tolerate more only because I view him again. He feels like a character to me. You know, I don't know if you've seen Good Will Hunting. But he's like a Southie. He's like one of the Southies from Good Will Hunting.
Yes.
And his... just him as a person, it's like if I were out there with him, I'd so want to be connected with him and in an alliance because I would know if I'm not, I am in trouble because he is a love you, hate you kind of guy. You know, some of his comments, you know, like that women should be held to a higher standard, for whatever reason, they don't offend me as much. I'm not sure why.
But I don't, that didn't really offend me so much because that if that, like just that comment alone of women need to be held to a higher standard is offensive. But what he was talking about was such a stupid thing about how if women going to a bar and hooking up with like, it was just such an idiotic conversation that they were having about that. And Lindsay was saying, no, it's if, you know, women should be able to go to a bar and hook up with whoever they want and not be judged. It's like, you know, this is the dumbest conversation that's ever been had.
It was. And, but for whatever reason, it didn't, the core of who he is, it doesn't come out as much as the core, you know, as we see, like, I guess it just didn't seem as, his behavior like that hasn't seemed as consistent.
And he loves his mom.
And he loves his mom and he vocalized, but then Dan has said that he loves his wife more than, you know,
like
more than
words. It's like a storybook, he said. Oh,
it feels very Rupert-ish. Just, wah.
My wife.
My wife. I love my husband also, but, you know, it's like, oh, come on. You know, but it's just, it feels, and maybe it's also with Rodney, I can wrap my head around a culture that he comes from, maybe. And maybe that's a part of it. And so I can think kind of this, because he's from Boston, right?
Yes.
Boston?
Yeah. But that is what it says on his shirt.
Okay. Oh, duh. Yeah. Sorry. you can see how observant I am. You know, that Boston culture, you know, loves his mom, family. You know, I picture, you know, I don't know, you know, but Ruff, he's also had, you know, I remember in his pregame interview things, he's not had a, you know, lived a charmed life, you know. And so maybe, again, knowing that about him before the game started, maybe I'm cutting him a little bit of slack that I shouldn't be. But that we don't know that piece, or we didn't know that piece about Will. We didn't know that piece about Dan. And so we're just seeing the behavior without knowing the history of where the heck is this coming from? You know, the behavior and the attitudes. But so that's the only way I can make sense of it.
All right. Let me ask you a couple of questions here from the listeners of the podcast. Teresa Beer Johnson wants to know, what's your opinion on social media use and how this season seems to have gone crazy with some cast posting so many group pictures on social media? Does this point to them all being on the jury? Is it too much of a giveaway? What about in general, Denise? What's your take on this? Now, you were part of, everybody seems to forget that you guys in Survivor Philippines, you guys were the hashtag Jive25, right?
What? No. Oh, I didn't even know that.
No, no.
No way.
Like, the Dirty 30, you know. You know, all about social media and stuff like that. Do you like to see that sort of thing as a longtime Survivor fan? Or,
you know,
did you like it better when they shut it down last season?
No, I don't mind it. Part of it is because I get curious. You know, it's like it's human curiosity. So I kind of like when I see the pictures and I can try and make guesses and try and make assumptions. And then I'm always wrong. You know, it's like, okay, what does that point to? Does that mean that they were all at Ponderosa together? Does that mean that they went on the pre-jury trip together? But until, you know, you finally see where, you know, where people are actually falling in the jury, you just don't know. So I don't mind it personally. You know, I think when it gets, you know, if it gets, you know, really negative and it's bashing, then I don't love it. But sometimes, I find it humorous. You know, I enjoy, you know, I'm not live tweeting. You know, I finally, after, I don't know if it was last season, I just was not motivated to tweet or write pretty much anything. But you know, I've just gone back to just enjoying watching it. So I don't live tweet or do that. And I'll kind of write a post later, but I enjoy reading, you know, reading things that people are writing. But you know, I think it's a personal preference. And honestly, if you don't want to see it, you can shut your own social media down. That's really it. If you don't want to see it, just, you can't follow them and don't go to their pages. And that's the best option I can imagine.
How come you guys during your season, you guys didn't like, fly to New York and then watch an episode with RC and and then go and hang out with Penner?
You just want to stir the pot. I know this. You know, many of us have job, you know, had jobs and families, and I can't go flying out to LA, you know, to go hang with Malcolm, you know, as much as that would have been fun. You know, after going through this, quite honestly, there's a small handful of people that I would really like to spend time with. And the rest, you know, I see as, you know, happy acquaintances and some that, you know what, I'm good. And so we just didn't, I mean, because your personalities are so different.
Who, Denise? Russell Swan?
No, actually Russell and I are fine now. Okay. We have kind of, so we're fine. Initially, that would have been one of those where it was like, you know what, I've tried to apologize to you. I've tried to talk with you and you don't want to accept it. So kind of piss on you. We have, you know, and that was all the way up to the finale. You know, we weren't speaking at the finale and it was so frustrating. You know, at this point we're totally fine. You know, I don't envision that Russell would ever want to fly to Iowa and hang out, you know, but if I was in, you know, out in his neck of the woods, I would be more than happy to go, you know, and have a lunch or catch up or see kind of what's happening. But you know, we have certain personalities that just don't, you know, without naming other names, you know, there are certain individuals I just don't need to spend time with. You know, our personalities in short doses, it'd be great.
Carter, right?
No, yeah, Carter. I love Carter. He's so quiet. You just got to get him to talk. No, Carter, Scoop and I really enjoy. Lisa, I enjoy. You know, Malcolm, I enjoy. Carter, you know, Penner, I would love to get to reconnect with. I mean, so there's that small handful.
I would love
to
see you too, Denise. You never call, you don't write.
I know. See? So I would love to be able to do that. And we do hope to be able to make a trip out to LA and see, you know, at some point and see, you know, a handful of people, you know, at some point. But I don't know. We just didn't. Our cast was not that bonded for whatever reason. You know, they just, again, every season's different personalities. I viewed it as it was a game, and it was a job, you know. And my job, it was a contract job. And so I went and I did my job, and I came home and I came back into my own life. And I, like I've said before, you know, I went back to work 2 days later, and I kind of, that was it. You know, and luckily, you know, like Malcolm and I have been able to connect a couple of times, suckered him into coming to Iowa, which was great, and doing a Tough Mudder. And, you know, so those relationships I really do value, you know, and I do, because again, I love Malcolm to death. You know, it's, you know, whether or not you call it brotherly friend, I don't know what you'd even, how you'd define it, but you know, he's a great guy, and that's probably the best thing I took from the game.
All right. Amy Lynn Shapiro wants to know, I would love to hear Denise talk about Abby Maria, who used bullying words and was sort of rude and out of control. How did Denise stay calm and in the game?
I didn't. Clearly, I didn't stay calm. And, you know, I didn't stay calm. You know, I tried, you know, I tried and bite my tongue and bite my tongue and bite my tongue. And I'd go bitch and moan to Malcolm, you know, and have a few choice words. And to production, clearly I was vocal. But I also knew in the game, I couldn't say those things directly to Abby, like, you are driving me insane, or you are so rude, or do you understand this? You know, and it did. There was a time after a reward that it all came to a head back at camp, and it was both myself and Penner kind of voicing to her, like, you are just unreal. Like, you are insufferable. Do you not understand how you are acting? And I can't remember. And that was, I believe, after, I can't remember if that was before the tribal council or after, but, you know, I had been describing essentially the goat and offended her, but, you know, it was not just myself at that tribal council. And that's what people, you know, at home didn't see, that it appears though, as though I was the primary one, you know, voicing my dislike or my struggle with Abby, you know, cutting me off and not listening and being rude. And it was, you know, several other people, you know, just, and so she did, she kind of got hammered at that game, but it's hard. That's, you know, so did I keep it out of the game? Absolutely not. It came into the game, and it could have really, really affected my game even worse than it did temporarily.
Do you think that Abby Maria is different now than she was when she played the game with you guys?
I think, and I do, and I love Abby. You know,
hypothetically, Abby, if she ever played again, do you think we would see we would see a similar Abby Maria, or we would see a different person?
You'd see a similar one, because in real life, it's Abby Light. You know, mm-hmm. It's like you have like the full version, and then you have Abby Light, and because the person, again, Abby is who Abby is, and she is feisty, and she is, you know, she is a strong-minded woman, and she has opinions, and she is not afraid to voice them. And for her, it got complicated because she was injured and didn't feel well. And, you know, all those dynamics come into play. But again, she's got her own history, you know, that came into the game, that it wasn't until after the game that I really had to sit back and go, you know, you got to cut her a little bit of slack. You know, her history is really different than my history, you know, her coming to the U.S. and how she was raised, and that affects who she is. But Abby is Abby, and I'm, you know, and she, I drove her crazy and she drove me crazy. But again, the great thing that's missing from this season right now is that, or at least that I know of, is Abby and I actually had the ability, you know, even in that final tribal council, I apologized to her, and it was genuine. You know, I didn't want to hurt her. I didn't want to make her feel small or, you know, feel demeaned. The core of what I felt was still there, but I should have said it differently or could have. And I was able to apologize to her outside the game. And she apologized in her own way to me also, you know, like, hey, I, you know, had PMS and my knee hurt the whole time. So that was her apology. And I think she goes back to being who she is. But it's a much lighter version of that and a pleasant version of that.
Okay. Abby Light.
Abby Light. There we go.
All right. This is, I feel like we've asked you this question before. Danish Rashid says, we all want to know why artists and Scoopin don't get along. And since they haven't given us a clear answer yet, what could Denise tell us?
I'll just tell you, first of all, there's no amount of therapy that's ever going to fix that.
Yes.
This is a marriage that dissolved and will never be repaired. And I don't know. You know, again, there was so much history in that Tandang tribe before I got there.
Yeah. So whatever happened between them happened before the merge, right?
Yep. It started, there was an issue with There was an issue with their shelter and you know, it being built and maybe the way that Mike wanted it built and maybe it fell and it could have hurt somebody, and which is a very real thing. And Artis, again, is a very strong minded individual. And if you, and again, Artis is another one. Only after the game did I get to know him and love him to death. But I do believe Artis has kind of got a little flavor of that Rodney. And mm-hmm. if you mess with him, you screw with him, you're dead to him. And Scoopin is dead to Artis. You know, he is just dead. So I think Scoopin would be more than willing to sit down.
He would.
No way. I think he would. I think Scoopin would be willing to sit down and talk with anybody. You know, that's just who he is. He likes to talk.
I don't know. So. He doesn't like to talk to everybody. I feel like I saw a video one time. There was a guy that was trying to talk to him. He didn't want to talk to him one time.
Oh, true. Yeah. So maybe not. I might be wrong.
Maybe not everybody.
All
right. One last question from Emily Rose Forster. Has Denise been watching Sexbox on WeTV? What? They got canceled.
Shocker. No, I saw the advertisement for it. And, you know, even as a sex therapist, there are certain things I don't need to see. And, you know, I wasn't, you know, as curious as I was, and maybe I'll have to like Google it and YouTube it. I never did. You know, I heard, you know, Tyson and Spencer talking about it, I think on one of your podcasts.
Oh, you listened to the Spicin' Hour?
I did. I swim and I swim for an hour and I'm not kidding. Your podcasts are what get me through that. So I listen.
Wait, how do you listen when you swim?
I have a waterproof iPod.
Oh, wow. And
so, yeah. So it's awesome. So I listen.
Does anybody else listen underwater?
I don't know, but we'll have to find out. You know, my husband's got a, you know, headphones now, and it just makes it go by so much easier. So I listen to you when I'm swimming and when I'm running. And so, yeah, I'd heard about Sexbox, but I thought, you know, yeah, I talk about it enough in my daily work and I see enough, and yeah, I don't need to see it behind a, you know, in a box on a stage.
Yeah. So, well, you don't see anything. I think you just see them go in, so, and then then they talk about what happened.
So what's the point?
Are
they getting counseling about it?
I think they have
coaching?
like sexual issues, and then they go ahead.
Okay.
And then they talk about like, okay, so how was that? Like,
it felt really awkward because I'm on national TV having sex, but
yeah, well, nobody's watching
like
though.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, so on the one hand, there could be value in that, you know, like, and that's like people saying, well, what do you do? How do you do sex therapy? I'm not in the room with them, and I'm not touching them or doing, you know, I'm just giving them suggestions. But that's the one piece that I guess, you know, hey, maybe it could be helpful, like have that sex box and you can actually be giving them the feedback in the moment. But I'm good.
Right. I'm could just have them like do their homework and then come into you and then talk about how it went.
And that's what we do. And yes. that's exactly what we do. So we talk pretty detailed, pretty specific. So.
Okay. Did you hear our pitch for Sex Pyramid on Spicin' Hour?
No.
Oh, you'll have to go back into the archives.
Do you remember which episode?
Well, I don't remember, but it involves a different shape room, and then that they throw a third person in there with the couples, and then come out and tell how that story went.
Oh, this I will go back and listen. I will go back. We'll see if somebody ever pitches that one.
I don't know if WeTV is the right venue. I think that's the biggest problem.
I don't think so.
Well, Denise, thank you so much. I'm so glad we were able to do this. Was there anything else about this season that you wanted to get off your chest that we didn't get to cover?
No, I think I got to filter myself a little bit, but it's been a great season. So it's been a blast to finally get to connect, and the timing was right. So hopefully the next, how many, we have 4 episodes left, I think.
I think that's too many. I think we have 2 more Wednesdays and then the finale.
Oh my gosh. That's it. So only 3. So yeah, we're down to the wire, but no, it's been fun to have just a really good, solid season back. And I love the all newbie format.
Why, were you out on San Juan del Sur? You thought it wasn't good?
I didn't. It was kind of lackluster for me, and I just didn't, you know, the ending was the only ending that I was really happy with. But again, you know, in terms of personal attacks, you know, I could, that's a whole nother podcast to go on, you know,
you didn't like his final tribal council speech.
I thought it was really crappy. That's, you know, it's just, again, it's that attacking of, it's when it gets personal and it becomes, it was more about a performance. And that's who Reed is. I mean, Reed's a performer, and that's what it felt like. And it was just mean.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I wasn't a fan.
Okay. But, well, I suspect we might see some fireworks at this final tribal council.
I imagine it will be big time. Like, depending on who's in that final three, it'll be huge.
Could be. Yeah.
So it'll be huge. It'll be good.
Could be wild. All right. Well, Denise, thank you so much. Okay. So if you want to keep up with Denise, follow Denise on Twitter. She is at Goofy Gal. At Goofy Gal 1171 on Twitter.
There you go. Okay. And I'm not tweeting as much, but I'm there.
Yeah. And Denise, can I tell you a really quick funny story?
We
recorded this interview over FaceTime that we were trying to figure out the best way to do this. So we had to test out how to do this. You know this part, Denise. I'm telling the people that are listening.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And so Denise had to, you know, FaceTime me yesterday. She didn't think I was going to answer, but I said, you know, said hi. Okay, good, great. Talk to you tomorrow. So yesterday, then I start getting text messages from Nicole, who was downstairs. And she was like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm working. And she's like, who's Goofy Gal? And I'm like, why? And she was like, all mad at me. And she's like, why? Well, and it turned out that she went to go on my iPad and missed FaceTime call from Goofy Gal. And she was like, so who is Goofy Gal? And we had taken the baby to Disneyland, and I said to her, that's somebody I met at Disney, Goofy Gal. She's like, why? Tell me who she, I said, Nicole, I didn't know you had this jealous streak.
Oh, so you're not even reassuring her. You're just pushing the buttons with her.
Because I wanted to feel like, I wanted to feel like, okay, maybe she is jealous. I wanted her to be jealous because I wanted to feel like that there was me. She just wanted to get me, like, I don't think that she was like, she's like, I can't let somebody else have him. He's all mine. She's like, awesome. You know, you'll just be in trouble that if I caught you in something.
You went kind of caveman on her.
Yes. Okay. So I was hoping, I wanted to see that she was jealous, but. It didn't. Jealousy wasn't the right emotion. It was just that she was, you know,
she
like
was irritated. She was like, "What the?"
Yeah,
heck?
She was like, she was mad.
Freaking Goofy Gal.
Yeah,
like I'm pissed.
Right. And it wasn't.
What are you doing when I'm not home?
Right.
Oh my. So did you tell her then? Obviously, she knows.
I did tell her.
Oh my gosh, that is funny. Yeah. And then you said, "Yeah, Goofy Gal, nothing to worry about."
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Tried to reassure her, but it wasn't
too funny.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yes. And it wasn't like, oh, thank God. Thank God that, you know, you're faithful to me. It was just like, well, why didn't you just tell me in the first place?
Why'd you have to get me all worked up? Why couldn't you? Yeah. And that's exactly what I would have said to my husband. Like, seriously, you had to drag that out for 15 minutes? What the fuck's wrong with you?
Yes. All right. Well, that.
You guys just need your ego stroked every now and then, right?
Yes. That's all I wanted. That's all I wanted.
There you go.
All right. Well, my marriage is still standing, thankfully, after this podcast. Cast, Denise.
Good.
All right. Well, awesome. all the best to you. Everything else is going good in your world?
It is. All is good and all's good with you. So all's good. Okay. So, no. Love, yeah. All everything's fine.
All right, Denise. Well, thank you so much. Oh, let me give a hashtag to people. Do you have an idea for a hashtag for this episode?
Oh, crap.
All right. What do you think of hashtag Abby Light?
That's I like that. There you go. Abby Light.
We'll see if
Abby's pissed at me after this one, but no.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh my God. Awesome.
All right. Denise.
Hey, thanks, Rob.
All the best.
Talk.
Take care. Okay.
Hey, you too. Bye, Rob.
All right. All right, everybody. There you have it. Denise Stapley back here on the podcast. So great job by Denise here in the bonus coverage spot. And here we are about 2.5 weeks away from the Survivor Worlds Apart finale. And we have got a fantastic week of coverage coming up. It's Tyson week. We've got so much Tyson. We've got Tyson coming out our ears because we have Spice and Hour, which is going to be coming up. You can hear that on Monday later on in the day on robiswebsite.com. And then our big Survivor recap podcast is with the winner of Survivor Blood versus Water. Tyson Apostle will be our guest for the recap and the voicemails here on the show this Thursday. So it's going to be a big, big week on the podcast. Looking forward to everything that comes. And don't forget about everything going on with Big Brother Canada, because Derek, the winner of Big Brother 16, that will be our guest on the Big Brother Canada recap. That's coming up on Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We got Amazing Race exit interviews. We've got Big Brother Canada exit interviews. We'll talk to the next person kicked off of Survivor. We'll have Survivor Know-It-Alls. And then, of course, Jessica and I will get back together for the Amazing Race on Friday. Boy, it is going to be one jam-packed week. Also over on post-show recaps, in addition to our Game of Thrones coverage, Josh Wigler also covered the Avengers Age of Ultron. That's all on postshowrecaps.com. So we got something for everybody. Ton of podcasts coming your way. Thanks for checking it out. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say about Denise in the comments. And we'll talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye.